Tonight's shiur is a little bit different than usual. I don't have a source sheet, and I just want to share an idea. It's based on an idea that I first heard a number of years ago, maybe 15 years ago, from a man by the name of Rabbi Joel Cohn. Rabbi Joel Cohn used to be the principal of SIR Elementary School. And I heard it from him first, just the Dvar Torah part of it. And I also saw later, I saw the same idea mentioned in two places. I saw it in the Sefer that we have here called Rav Shimon Schwab on Prayer. That was in 1995. He died in 1995. You can see the basic idea there on page 425. And I also saw this idea in a Sefer called Shemen HaTov in Volume 1. Shemen HaTov has five volumes. His is volume one. And the author is alive today, Baruch Hashem, Rav Dov Zev Weinberger Shlita. Used to be the rabbi of a shul in Brooklyn. He's no longer, but he is alive and well, Baruch Hashem. And I saw this idea on the psukim that I'm going to quote in a few minutes. So that's the bare Dvar Torah I heard, but the way I'm going to share it with you is my own idea. It's an idea that I share, Baruch Hashem, I've been sharing every year for really 15 years, I think, if not longer. I can't be longer. I think I first heard it 15 years ago. Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, this is not part of the idea, but Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, Zatzal, was asked, he used to go to every time he went to a wedding, if he spoke under the chuppah, gave a Dvar Torah under the chuppah, or at Sheva Brachos, he used to say the exact same idea. I don't know what he said, actually. I should find out what he said. He used to say the exact same Dvar Torah, and at some point, and bracha. And he, at some point, his Talmidim asked him, Rav, you know, you can say, you know, the whole Torah, backwards and forwards, you could think of something else. And he said to him, you're right, indeed, I could think of something else. But I don't want to think of something else. This is a message that I want to share, and therefore I share it with this Kala and that Chassan and that Kala and that Chassan, so I'm going to share it also. And so yes, it's half apologies to Shana Bet because they have heard this before, but at the same time, it's not an apology because it's a message that I think is very important. And so here we go. I'm going to tell you a story. You're going to run the risk of spacing out because the story sounds very similar to a story that you're used to. But I'm imploring you to pay close attention, because if you don't pay close attention, you won't realize that the story is not the story that you're familiar with. And here we go. The story is Yaakov and his sons are living in Eretz Canaan. They are relatively successful, wealthy, secure. They did lose a son. He was killed by wild animals a long time ago. But other than that, the family seems to be doing well. Little story with their daughter, but she's fine. And they're fine until a famine hits. And they need to send their representatives, children, to the place where the food exists, and that is in Eretz Mitzrayim. Now, what this family didn't know is that years before, their son was not killed by wild animals. He was, pay attention, sounds familiar. That son was not killed by wild animals. He, in fact, was almost murdered by his own brothers, and he was sent to Mitzrayim. And one thing led to another. He was very, very successful. His boss's wife accused him of some terrible things. He was thrown in jail. And in jail, he actually shared a cell with two people. One used to be the head of the bakery of the king. And one, pay attention, sounds familiar. And one was the head of the whole, I guess, what do you want to say? The bartender, the drink master was in the cell with him. And Yosef was in jail with them, the three of them in jail. I'm sure it wasn't so comfortable. And one night, the head baker and the head wine steward had terrible, terrible dreams. Pay attention. Sounds familiar? We didn't get that far in the Parsha, so we're not sure. But I think it sounds familiar. And one night they had a dream. A terrible dream. Each one of them had a terrible dream, and it really bothered them. Even when they woke up, they were so visibly pained and distracted and could not focus. Their heads, their minds were all completely they were distracted. Yosef woke up in the morning with them as well. He was busy with his own problems. His father sent him to his brothers, even though he knew that his brothers were going to kill him or try to kill him. Not only that, his brothers tried to kill him, and he was sent in jail for no reason. He didn't do anything wrong, and yet he was thrown in jail. He had no time for anybody. So the baker had a problem, the wine man had a problem, and Yosef didn't have a chance to really speak with them. No one knew anything. 3 days later, both the baker and the wine steward were brought out. The wine guy was found out that he was fine. He was able to be returned to his original job. The baker was not returned to his original job. The king cleared his throat, if you know what I mean. Cleared his throat. And the baker was put to rest, if you know what I mean. And that was it. That was it. A couple years later, I forgot to mention at some point, Yosef is still stuck in jail. A couple years later, Paro has a dream. Very disturbing dream. He has two dreams. Very disturbing dreams. And yet when he wakes up in the morning, nothing was able to... He didn't know how to solve them. No one knew how to solve them. His assistants tried to solve this suggestion, that suggestion. No one had anything to say of merit for the king. And eventually, these dreams were forgotten, and that was it. The reason why the dreams were forgotten is because out of nowhere, with no preparation whatsoever, there was a huge economic boom. They've never seen wealth like this in the history of Egypt, and they just lived the high life. And there's no reason to save up because this is going to last forever. It wasn't just 6 months; it was a year, and another year, 5 years, 6 years, 7 years. It was outrageous. The high life, throwing away money, burning wheat. Who needed? We have no place to store them. Who needs to store them? At some point, Yosef, who was in jail, now it's 9 years, stuck in jail, he died, a lonely man, a sad man in jail. No one ever saved him, no reason to save him. He committed the worst crime you can imagine in Egyptian history. He died in jail, a sad, poor, lonely man. And at some point, snap your fingers, 7 years into this huge economic boom, Egypt all of a sudden turns a corner, gone. The wheat is no longer. And it's just as good as the good years were, and is that bad in the terrible years. Famine, terrible, terrible, terrible famine. And there was no wheat. They had burned. If only we had known ahead of time. We didn't know. So we burned wheat. I would have built storehouses and put them in, but it just, we didn't know. And so basically Egypt went through a terrible depression. Egypt, I mean, people were dying, people were leaving. Go back to the Jewish community in Egypt, in Eretz Canaan. There was no place for these Jewish young men to go. The original plan was, they had a famine there too. And the original plan was to send these sons to Egypt, but Egypt didn't have any wheat either. There was no wheat in Egypt. And so this young Jewish clan, Yaakov and his sons, those who were survived, started dying out. There was no... this one left, and this one died. This one married into another family because they had no way to survive. And basically, pretty soon after the famine began, the Jewish community, the Jewish people, died out. There was no Jewish people. The remnant of the Jewish people can be found on a Wikipedia page. Look up Jews or Judaism or Jacob. I guess the three J's, Jews, Judaism, or Jacob, and they'll have a very short Wikipedia page that says there was a small clan that started with Abraham, Isaac, Jacob. Jacob had many children, but this Jewish clan began a very special idea called monotheism. But that Jewish, they called themselves Jews, Jewish, B'nai Yisrael, after Isaac, I'm sorry, after Jacob, was also called Israel. But the Jewish religion is no longer. It's a very nice thing. There might be a museum somewhere to see some artifacts. We have very, very little remaining, and there's no Jews. That's not the parsha, I don't think, right? I haven't gotten to the end of the parsha yet. It's only Sunday, but I'm pretty sure that's not the way the parsha ends. Are you right? Am I right? All right. I think that we know the story. If you paid attention, the story started out very similar to the story that you know. Yosef, brothers, Egypt, Eshet Potiphar, jail, baker, wine steward, wake up in the morning. But then it took a turn. You familiar with where the turn took? It was a turn that was taken. The story that I had told, which was not the Parsha, the story that I told is that Yosef, of course, didn't solve any dreams, and so there was no warning for the baker to come back. There was no warning for the wine steward to come back. 2 years later, there was no Ein Potero Tam Lefaro. Nobody was able to, including Yosef. Why would anybody think of a lowly Hebrew slave who has anything important to contribute? A lowly Hebrew slave who tried to commit adultery with Potiphar's wife. That's not the smartest thing in the world. So of course we're not going to talk. No one knows who he is anymore. It's lost. But Paro had a dream, and it was also the message was lost. And the way the story that I told is that the B'nai Yisrael died out, chas v'shalom, because no plans in Mitzrayim and no plans for B'nai Yisrael to go down to Mitzrayim. Of course, first of all, the story of the Wikipedia page is I'm only speaking b'derech ha-teva. I don't really believe chalila v'chalila, netzach Yisrael lo yeshaker, chalila v'chas, there's no such thing as B'nai Israel being extremely extinguished. But I'm talking B'derech HaTeva. The story that I told is completely possible, would have been completely, completely possible. Two stories. B'nai Israel thriving in Mitzrayim, coming down with 70 people, leaving with 2 million people, getting the Torah, getting into Eretz Yisrael, 2017 in Medinat Yisrael. That's one story that you know very well. And the story that I told is a Wikipedia page. Doesn't even fill the whole page. There were Jews, they died. That's not what we're used to. And the point of departure between the glorious contributions of B'nai Yisrael to the world, B'derech HaTeva, B'derech HaTeva, B'derech HaTeva, the point of departure between the glorious story that you and I know and live and see and breathe, and the story that I told you of death and destruction and like of a wisp of a cloud gone, the point of departure is Perek Mem Pasuk Zayin. The point of departure is four words. The point of departure, and that's why I call this Sicha, the four words that change Jewish history. I told the exact same story with complete legitimacy. B'derech HaTeva, B'derech HaTeva, B'derech HaTeva. And the only difference is in our Parsha, towards the end of the Parsha, in Perek Mem, Pasuk Zayin. The only difference, the point of departure, is four words. The four words that change Jewish history is when Yosef is in jail with the two people, the baker and the wine steward, and he says the following four words. Madua pneichem ra'im hayom. Madua pneichem ra'im hayom. Why are your faces so? What's the matter? What's the problem? You look troubled. Those four words open the door for the two of them to describe their dreams. He was right. 2 years later, ah yes, et chata'ay ani mazkir ayom, I was put in jail with that Jew. And he solved it. Paro says, give him a shave, give him a shower, bring him over here. Boom, the rest is history. The rest is history. Yosef, unbelievable. You're in charge. You're going to be in charge of the greatest economic boom our country has ever known. Yosef says, well, yes, 7 years, but realize it's going to flop. Great. Build storehouses. Save up. We're going to sell. I'm going to make you extremely wealthy, Paro. Not only that, go back to Eretz Canaan. Yaakov tells his brothers, I think Shikie Shever b'Mitzrayim. You got to go. There's food in Egypt. They go down. The rest is history. You are sitting here today in Eretz Yisrael with a Torah, with a land. Because Madua Pneichem Ra'im Hayom. Because B'derech HaTeva. Because Yosef decided to step a little bit out of his comfort zone. I say that because the Ramban of Moshe ben Nachman, who died in 1270, says that he had no business talking to these two huge officers in Paro's court. But it's a little uncomfortable. Who am I? I'm a little Yosef. I'm got accused of the worst thing. I'm not going to say, how you doing? But I'm going to say, how you doing? That's the Ramban says that. He didn't deserve, he wasn't supposed to. Because Yosef stepped out of his comfort zone a little bit, because Yosef was prepared to say, Madua pneichem ra'im ayom, to say, what's the matter? You look troubled. How can I help you? The fact that Yosef was able to greet people, v'sever panim yafot, he was able to quite literally, b'derech hateva, change the entire world. Stepping out of our comfort zone to ask how somebody else is doing, to invite somebody to share, to walk away when it's none of my business, but to stretch a little bit. I'm not so close to her that I'm going to be the one to say, Madua pneichem ra'im ayom. I'm going to be the one to say good morning. I'm the one that, to me to say, how are you today? I am going to do it. I'm not going to be the one who's going to pass it by. I too, quite literally, can change the world in 4 words or 3 words. How are you? How are you doing? You look like something's trouble. Oh, I'm wrong? Okay, I'm wrong. Okay. But somebody cared about me. Somebody asked how I'm doing. Madua pneichem ra'im ayom. I wanted to share a story that I have been telling for 6 years, because it happened in January 2010. In January 2010, I was traveling in the United States and in Canada, talking to people who applied to the school. I had a parlor meeting with parents and students in Toronto, Canada, and I decided to, the way I worked it, so that I can come back to Israel faster, I decided to have a parlor meeting a little early, and then I would catch the last flight, Air Canada, out of Toronto Pearson Airport, back into JFK, at New York. And no worries, all good, I get there plenty of time, I get on the plane, and we're not taking off, and we're not taking off, and we're not taking off. And generally, when you're on a plane, you do like to take off. You know, at some point, you do like to, when you're there for, there's good entertainment, I had a nice seat, but you would like the reason, you want to fly, and the plane was not flying. And at some point, somebody got on the loudspeaker, probably the pilot, and said, we're just trying to fix something, we're trying to do this, I don't remember what it was, we're waiting. I was very, very happy. I was learning, I'm where I needed to be, I was very happy. But I wasn't happy because I wanted to get there. I was getting late, and this is the last flight out of Canada, at least Air Canada's flight that night. And at some point they got on and they said, I'm sorry, it's too cold in Canada. They didn't say it like that, but that's what they meant. The gas tank, the cap to the is frozen to the airplane. And they literally, they can't take it off without breaking it. And pretty often we do like having gasoline in our planes in order to fly. It seems to be a rule in Canada that they need gasoline to go. And we can't open it. Everyone off the plane. Come back into the terminal, stand in line at the gate counter, and we'll take care of you. So I was sitting sort of towards the front, so I was maybe the fourth or fifth person in line, and people were yelling at this lady, this poor lady. They were yelling at her. I heard words, you know. It was not rated G. It was not rated G. It was like mature audiences only. And in this matter, I'm not very mature. It was really shocking to me. And it was my turn. At some point, it got to be my turn. And I said, boy, you'd think that it was your fault, the weather. Oh, yeah. And then I said this. I said, I'm very funny when I travel. I go, could you please tell me the number of God so I can call God and tell him to make the weather nicer? That's my impersonation of her. I said, is it 1-800-DIAL-GOD? She said, okay, enough. It's not funny anymore. No, she didn't say that. So So basically, fine. So she goes, we're not taking off. We're going to have to let you know there's going to be another flight. I said, but I thought there were no flights. No, it's okay. I said, don't let anybody bother you. I get yelled at sometimes. Just let it, you know, roll off your back or whatever I said over your head. Who cares about it? It's not your fault. Okay. She gave me a $10 voucher for food. Which there's so much kosher food in Pearson. I tried to use it to buy a book, but apparently you can only buy food with it. So that night's dinner was potato chips and an apple. All right, I've eaten since then. Nobody has to feel sorry for me. I'm okay. And I'm waiting and waiting, and there's announcements about this flight, you know, is going to be rescheduled, whatever it is. And I'm also getting a little bit nervous. It's also very late. And I have nowhere to go. I didn't know Emmy yet. I couldn't call her. So I was a little bit stuck. And it was getting late and whatever it is. And I was, okay. And there's no more flights. In other words, they're making a new flight. But if this doesn't work out, then, like, we're sleeping in Terminal 2. That's it. That's where we're doing. Vasikin at, you know, at the Delta Terminal or something. Anyway, about, I would say, an hour later, I'm not sure, they say that there's going to be a new flight. But the plane is a little bit smaller than the other plane, and some of you are not going to be able to get on the plane. That's very calming, and it's like, oh, so special. Listen, as long as you're trying. And around that moment, the loudspeaker goes, Air Canada passenger Yamin Goldsmith, which I'm always Yamin Goldsmith whenever I'm called. That's Rabbi Yamin Goldsmith to you. Air Canada passenger Yamin Goldsmith, please come to customer service. Which, you know how in a movie there's like they're saying this, but there's a caption underneath? So they said Air Canada passenger Yamin Goldsmith, please see customer service. On the bottom it said, you ain't getting on this plane, dude. You know, like that kind of thing. And they called me dude, at least in the movie. So I said, boy. So I carried my three bags with me to customer service. Why three? I had my carry-on. And I had two bags under here, just like, and they were, by the way, they were overweight. They were unable to fit on the overhead. I'm like, I turned 97 years old. Like, if there was a soundtrack to my movie, you know, to my life, da 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 da, there was like a guy with a noose walking behind me, like, you're next. I said, oh God, all right. So I come up and I come to the counter. Okay, I'm trying to finish on time. I'm sorry, guys. I'm almost done. So I come to the counter, and they have to like use a crowbar to get the, you know, the boarding pass out of my hands. Like, I don't want to give it. And I say, sir, you have to give it. No, I'm just kidding. I like reluctantly. I'm a little exaggerating, but I was not happy to give over And she looks at it, and she says the two words that you never want to hear from Air Canada customer service or from your dentist. She goes, mm-hmm. That's the two words she said, which I don't speak Canadian, but I think it means, like, you're fried. Like, can you sleep on cement, I think is what she meant to say. Hold on a minute, please, Isaac. I didn't say it. I have no choice. I'm not staying at your house. What am I going to do? She gets on the loudspeaker, and she goes, I'll never forget the name. Blinette, I hope I'll never forget the name. Oh, not on the loudspeaker, on a walkie-talkie. She goes, I don't know why I use my left hand for walkie. Okay. I put the microphone down. She goes, Tish, dial 465. Tish, dial 465. Her name was Tish. And I, like, Tish, yacht kiss slave, I'm ready for it. No, anyway, she goes, Tish, dial 465. The number I don't remember, but whatever. Dial 465. We waited for about 10 years, 15 years. I don't know how long, but a long time. No answer. That's my impersonation of a walkie-talkie. Tish, dial 465. Tish, dial 465. That was my impersonation of hanging up on that. And then she goes, you're waiting, waiting. And then the third time she does it, Tish walks by. She's on the, she has the mic. I can hear it. I go, Tish, come on. Tish. She comes by. She didn't call. She walked by. So she comes by. And I recognize Tish. Tish is my best friend. We were in yeshiva together so long ago. I said the dial God joke. But I didn't, it was in my head. She didn't. So she comes over. The woman behind the counter, they're whispering a little bit, and then the woman behind the counter takes my boarding pass and rips it up! literally rips it up. And what I said at the time, what I wanted to say was, is there anything you can do, ma'am? I would love to be able to get home to civilization or warmth or a pillow. Potato chips are good for, you know, dinner and breakfast, but I thought maybe, but all I was able to think of was, oh. That was like the first thing that came to my, I wasn't able to articulate anything more than that. That was the first thing. Anyway, she tore it up. So she says to Tish, I'm sorry, and she print, and then a new one gets printed out. I didn't know what it was, a hotel voucher. It was another boarding pass. So she looks at it and she goes, Tish, Tish. She goes, Tish, you gave him a 1A? Which is code for ready to embalm him quickly in Canada, and I don't know. So Tish goes, yeah, yeah. So the woman behind the counter goes, you know there are gold members on the flight. So whatever that language was. So she goes, yeah, no problem. She hands me a ticket to the flight that was taking off in 30 minutes. I was sitting in seat 1A, first class, Air Canada, back to JFK. And I, wait a minute. I go, oh! I go, Tish! No. I go, why? I shouldn't have said that, because she could have just cut it up again. I go, Tish, why? And she goes, you were nice to me at the counter. Aww. I said, I don't know how to thank you. She said, you already thanked me. You know, you run and get your plane. I, like, took all my bags and ran. Isn't that a great story? That's a great story. Madua pneichem ra'im hayom. There's more to say. There's more to say, but that is my Vayeshev story. Ladies, each one of us has a Tish in our own lives. And the trick is, A, to recognize that, and B, to act upon it. Madua pneichem ra'im hayom. The truth of the matter is that I did see that she was really down, and it wasn't her fault, and I didn't really think about it so much. I just felt a little bit awkward for her that people are yelling at her for the snow or for the ice, and that's it. And guess what? I didn't do anything special. I get more than that. I didn't do anything that every single person in this room wouldn't do. I didn't do anything else. I didn't give her money. I didn't de-ice the plane. I said, how's it going? What's the problem? The dial 1-800-GOD thing you probably wouldn't do, but that's okay. It's better not to. I regret that part of the thing. Just madua pneichem ra'im hayom. Four words that change world history and four words that change people's history. Have a good evening, everybody.
Thank you.